It's definitely that there's definitely the need there. In my experience, and I've been in horses a long time, most deals were done on a handshake. And the problem with handshakes is each party has a different recollection of the terms of that deal when trouble happens. So my goal through these years has been to educate the industry on the importance of legal contracts, the importance of putting things down. I have a mantra: put things in writing. And if I could leave this earth with one thing for the horse industry, it would be put things in writing.
There is a depth and a breadth to our lives that largely goes unexplored. As an equestrian life mindset coach and host of this podcast, I am here to lead you on that exploration. Deep conversations covering topics in and out of the show ring with industry leaders and unsung heroes alike, sharing their stories and what makes their journey unique, but relatable at the same time. We all have stories to share and lessons to trade, something we've learned from a horse or from each other. So relax and be ready to listen with more than just your ears. I'm Tracy Mitchell. Welcome to Hitting Your Stride. A good lawyer knows the law inside and out. A great lawyer is the same, but with a passion that is as strong as their knowledge base is deep. Catherine Wilson could easily fall into the latter classification, and my conversation with her for this episode makes it clear her passion for horses knows no limits. A practicing litigator for more than 30 years, Catherine has experience in civil litigation, construction, and employment law, as well as equine law. That's only part of the story, as she's also chair of the Risk Management Committee and an honorary governor of the Royal Agricultural Winter Fair, a legal expert for the Canadian Federation of Independent Business Member Services, an instructor at the University of Guelph, and now a published author with the release of Canadian Equine Law, a guide for anyone working with horses in Canada. For as much as she has packed onto her resume, Catherine is so much more than that. She's been riding through her life, as she puts it, becoming infatuated with horses as a young girl. That interest grew and thrived as she progressed through life, and she's officially dove into equine law in 1989. Since then, she's seen the hunger for this information become more widespread, and it's been part of her purpose to feed that hunger. Like everyone with a full life, Catherine makes a point of finding balance and taking time for herself and the things she enjoys, horses included. Anyone who is involved with the horse industry in Canada, from the professionals who run barns and ride and train, or the grooms and other support staff, to the casual small farm owners, this episode has information that's relevant to the everyday operations that go on, and this is information that everyone should know. And for my listeners abroad, this might just inspire you to check out the parameters of equine law in your countries. Catherine offers up a fascinating conversation, so I hope you'll enjoy her Hitting Your Stride debut as much as I did. Enjoy. So I would like to welcome Catherine Wilson to Hitting Your Stride. Thank you for joining me today, Catherine.
Lovely to be here.
This is great. This is a great opportunity for our listeners to learn a little bit of something that I don't think we normally think about as far as the topic of equine law goes. So I'm very excited about this. So to start off, who is Catherine Wilson and what is her horsey story? Where did this passion come from?
All right. Well, I'm a lawyer. I've been a lawyer for over 30 years. I won't say how many years over 30, but over 30 years. Called to the bar in 1989, had the pleasure of working with Gloria Epstein, who is a former Court of Appeal judge and an avid rider. And I have been riding since I was 10. I was leading ponies since I was 8, just to be able to get on a horse. And from there, I've just been riding through my life as and when and how I can. So I loved horses. I love the law. And when I went to Gloria's and said, I want to do equine law back in 1989, and I want to write articles and develop a practice, she said, sure. So I think maybe I was one of the very first, perhaps the only equine lawyer at that time. And I've continued since that day. And the career has taken me to many interesting areas with many interesting people and many industries of horses. So that's who I am. In addition to horse law, I do construction law, commercial civil litigation, employment law, and I used to do family law. So it was a broad practice, all with litigation and contracts, but the horse law is, of course, my passion.
Now, as with all horse people, it really is, isn't it? So, do you find that your equine practice is most of what you do now? Have you evolved it into being that for yourself?
My equine law practice is usually about 30% of my practice, 30 to 40%. It depends. If we have larger cases, it becomes more. If we have smaller cases, it's less. I would say construction and equine law are my
Okay.
two, and some unemployment right now, those three.
Okay.
I don't think you're not gonna get rich doing equine law. Let's put it that way.
So it's a passion, like you said. It's something you feel that there's a need for.
There's definitely the need there. In my experience, and I've been in horses a long time, most deals were done on a handshake. And the problem with handshakes is each party has a different recollection of the terms of that deal when trouble happens. So my goal through these years has been to educate the industry on the importance of legal contracts, the importance of putting things down. I have a mantra, put things in writing. And if I could leave this earth with one thing for the horse industry, it would be put things in writing, because it helps to avoid conflict, resolve disputes, and allows transactions to flow smoothly.
It's kind of
So
interesting. Sorry, I was just thinking it's kind of interesting because the horse world is its own little thing. There you hear stories about maybe not so nice experiences, but then you also hear stories about where I think because we all think or assume that we're in it because we love it, that the handshake is all that you would need. So do you find that you're in your process of educating equestrians and horse owners and breeders and trainers about this process, that it's been a real eye-opening experience for them, or have they been like, ah, nah, I don't need to worry about that? What are you finding?
They're hungry for the information. They're hungry for the information because many people in this industry are in it as a full-time business. Horses are expensive. I mean, there are the small shops and the small barns and the pleasure riders, but a lot of people spend a lot of money on horses and have large ambitions. We've had cases with multi-million dollar, like million-dollar horses, right? Horses in sport horses are hundreds of thousands of dollars. So, and racehorses. So it can be a very expensive industry. So people welcome this information because it's not there. So, I mean, I've just written Canada's first equine law book, and it took me a while to get it done, but it's done. There are equine law books in pretty much every other common law country I've looked at, but not Canada. There are no, I teach at Guelph an equine law course. There are no other equine law courses that I'm aware of. There might be in Alberta, but not that I'm aware of. Whereas down in the States, they have law schools with large equine law components. So we don't have that information here, and we need it because people show up at my desk only because they haven't had that information. They've entered some kind of a deal and they haven't thought of consequences that if they were more aware of the law in the area, they would have.
Okay, so ultimately, yes, we're talking about horses or cases that are worth millions and hundreds of thousands of dollars, and some of these bigger entities other than the mom and pop shops or the person trying to sell a horse. What would you say to somebody who's listening that's trying to sell their low five-figure horse?
that, something to be aware of.
Okay, so for the pleasure riders, for the people who love riding and it's the lower end of the costing, bills of sale. Put your purchase and sale agreement in writing. And that means, as a seller, what are you willing to promise with respect to this horse? You promise it's going to be sound. You might promise it can jump 3 feet. You might promise it's good with children, right? Promises are warranties or conditions in legal terms. Are you willing to promise anything with the horse or just this is a horse, period? So your promises should be in writing in that agreement and only the things you really think you can promise. Okay. As a purchaser, you want to say, I'm buying this horse. What is important to me about this horse? Am I buying this horse because I want it to be a safe mount for my child? Put that in the agreement. Am I buying this horse because it's a certain level of dressage or it has these qualities or it's a pure this or that? Put it in the agreement. And then if that's not true, you've got a written agreement that you can take to the court that said, they told me this is what the horse was. Here it is in writing. And that's why I bought the horse. And you have the ability then to get a remedy. But if you don't have it in writing, they're not going to remember what they said in the arena while the horse is trotting around. And you're going to remember very differently than they do. So for the smaller horse owner, put it in writing, sale agreements and lease agreements. I can't tell you how often I get a knock on the door and it's, I gave my horse to so and so to look after for 2, 3 years free. Free board, they're going to ride it, they're going to look after it, and then I want it back. And it's they say it's not my horse anymore, right? Breeding, or just pleasure riding. So suddenly you're fighting over whose horse it is. So lease agreements, they should be in. So that's the lower end. Breeding, leasing, sale are big issues on the lower end, and on the higher end, syndicate agreements, again, sale agreements. Personal injury is a large one, not so big in Canada, thank God, just yet. But waivers, right? When you're riding, boarding agreements, another situation, right? Boarding, if someone's not paying you, how many days' notice do you have to give to have them leave, or if you want to leave, whose responsibility is what in a boarding situation?
So much to know. So
tax, tax. You want to talk racehorses? Let's talk tax. Tax, big tax issues with horses and farms.
Holy cow. All right, we are starting off with a bang here. That is awesome. I hope all the listeners are taking notes and they can wait and they can go buy your book too. All right. So you are involved with the Royal Agricultural Winter Fair. You publish in Horse Sport, and you are deeply involved with equine law, just to name a few. How many projects are too many for the high achievers who are listening right now? Maybe I might be one of those. How do you make room for it all?
Well, I'm probably a bad example because I do too much. So I'm a bad example, but I have a lot of lists. And if I could give anyone advice, I would say put yourself things on that list too. So it's not just the work things, it's also the self things go on that list. And over the years, I've learned don't cheat yourself on the self things. They're not the last thing on your list. And if you don't prioritize yourself, eventually the train comes off the tracks. So if you want the train to keep going on the tracks, you're going to have to keep fueling it. And that fuel is different for different people, but that means self priority is as important as the work priority. I fit in a lot in a day, a lot. There's a lot, there's exercise, there's work, there's, you name it. And a lot of it's with lists, but I guess that would be my advice is make sure that the self gets on that list and look after the train.
Awesome. Yeah, it's I mean, it's something. I mean, I'm just coming off of my, this is my fifth day off in a row. I took advantage of the long weekend and I had a birthday in there, and I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna take some time. And it's really interesting. Yesterday I started to feel like my energy. I was like, okay, this is a reminder, because when we're all bogged down with so much and trying to keep up, I was like, oh my God, I don't think I can do this anymore. I'm at my wit's end. But all I needed was a few days and my energy is back and feeling better. But yeah, I mean, you talk to horse people, as you know, we're all high achievers. We're all focused on what's doing best for the horses and the amount of time that goes into it all. And it can be exhausting. And it's funny, all the people that I coach with Equestrian Elements Life Coaching, and you know, my clients for the massaging, nobody, well, I wouldn't say nobody, but it's a very small percentage that actually puts themselves on that list. It's kind of sad. It's concerning.
Well, I think if you, and happy birthday, by the way.
Well,
Happy
thank you.
birthday. But I think if you do think of yourself as the packaged good, or the engine that keeps everything going, it perhaps allows you to justify putting self on that list, because you're in it for the long term, not the short term. So
Right.
to avoid burnout and to keep that engine going, you've got to put self on the list. It's like maintenance, regular maintenance.
I think that might be my new mantra. I'm in it for the long term, just to kind of help remind myself. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Can you encapsulate what equine law covers and why it's important to have advocates like yourself involved in it?
Equine law covers everything to do with the horse industry. The law touches absolutely everything, from going out on a hack outdoors. I'm thinking, are you going alone? Are you going with other people? Have you ridden the horse before? Is the horse suited for you? How's the tack? If you're under 18, you know, in Ontario, there's the Horse Riding Safety Act. Are you wearing a helmet and proper footwear? You know, what's your safety backup? What are the trails like? Are they on private property? Are they on public property? You know, what are the rules around the trails? So that's just going on a hack. But you know, in a barn, let's talk employment. How are the staff in the barn paid? Are they contract workers? Are they covered under WSIB if they got kicked by a horse? Are they employees? What are their rights? What about kids in barns? Summer camps, summer camp time. Are kids wearing helmets in the barns? Should they? That's not a rule, but it's good practice. If they're going into a horse's stall and they're under the age of, I don't know, 12, 13, 14, shouldn't they be wearing helmets walking around in a horse's stall? We wear helmets on bikes, we wear helmets skiing, but now we wear helmets all the time. Are helmets just for riding? Are helmets for taking horses to and from paddocks? So there's all the safety stuff that comes with law. And if a kid, God forbid, gets kicked, they're mucking out, they're taking out the, you know, the hoof, they're doing the hoof picking, they get kicked. Are they wearing their helmet when they're grooming that horse? Is that necessary? It's ho horrible for the child. It's horrible for the business. You know, one, it takes one accident, one bad accident, and everything you've worked for in your lifetime in that business could be gone. Have you got proper insurance? Have you got waivers? Are the waivers enforceable? You know, are the parents informed? What about dogs? Dogs in stables. You know, we used to bring our dogs to the stables and they would hang around. Should we do that? Are the dogs safe? Are they going to nip at the horse's heels when they're riding and cause an accident? So there's all these safety issues. And then there's the business issues. How are you being paid? How are people e-transferring you? Do you have contracts? Do you have contracts with your instructors? Can an instructor that's been with you for 5 years and develop this wonderful clientele at your barn leave and take your clients with them? How are you protected? So laws everywhere, and just a little bit of forethought helps you protect your business, protect your riders, protect your staff, and law touches all of that. And often these are things people don't even think about. WSIB coverage, you know, that's a no-brainer in other industries. In this industry, people don't even know about it sometimes. Sometimes it's mandatory, sometimes it's optional in horse barns. If it's optional, you can opt in. And if a staff member gets hurt, you're protected because WSIB looks after that staff member.
Wow.
People don't think about that.
One of the things that you were talking about with the little, with the kids, I mean, the whole idea of them wearing a helmet, going into a stall, doing anything with the horses. I mean, those little guys are at the perfect height for, I mean, the horse might not even be kicking to kick them. They might be just kicking a fly and, you know, something happens. And my goodness, yes, there's so many things in the dog thing. My goodness, I know I've been at a few barns where the dogs have not been a positive experience and the horses are not happy with the dogs there, and yet there they go. So, yeah. So, do you basically think that for most of things, like how out of all of those things you just shared, what would come out as a suggested contract? Like when you said waivers, but like should employees be signing something? Like, do barn owners and business owners need to ramp up what they're doing as far as the equine law part goes?
Well, let's take those one at a time. If we're talking employees, the issue with employees and stable owners are termination. How do you terminate, and how much money do you pay on termination to an ex-employee? Because you have to pay sometimes a lot. If an employee's worked for you for, say, 10 years, you could be paying them a year's salary on termination. That's a lot for a barn. So you can have employment contracts that reduce the amount of notice you have to give on termination. So termination is an issue for employees. Another issue for employees is stealing your clients. You get the best instructor ever, as I said, and they walk off with half your barn. How do you protect yourself against that? You can do it in a contract with a non-solicitation clause. There's another reason to have a contract. And then protection of your employees. If they get hurt on the job, what happens? You have insurance, you have WSIB. So you should look into that. These are, you know, what happens if an employee that I have is injured, and you should have facilities in place to guard against that. There's employees. Let's talk about borders. Well, the boarding agreement is always a good idea because it clarifies the rules of that barn, when payments are made, when boarding agreements terminate. If a horse has bad traits, bites, maybe it bites, you want to know that in the boarding agreement, so that you can take precautions. Maybe you have, you know, the metal bars that come down and a big sign, horse bites, right? Just to avoid the horse biting someone in the stable. Horse kicks, you know, or is a weaver. Maybe you don't want a weaver in your stable. So the vices of the horses are important in a boarding agreement. The waiver agreement, which is, you know, if I fall off my horse and hurt myself, I'm not going to sue you, barn. Waiver agreement's very important for boarders. What about boarders' guests? If they just come to the stable, probably they don't have to sign a waiver agreement. But say they're allowed, say it's the boyfriend or the girlfriend, and they put them on the horse and the horse takes off and the person gets hurt, barn gets sued. So maybe the waiver should encompass, guests that are allowed to ride. So that's boarding agreement, that's waivers. And then, you know, purchase and sale agreements, leasing agreements, et cetera.
Wow. Okay. So what comes up for me with that is talking about the staff and it, how hard it can be to find staff nowadays. You hear that everywhere. So often someone might be coming in saying, "Oh, yep," and someone's there for maybe a week and then they don't show up. So I'm kind of hearing barn owners say, "Well, it's so hard to find staff. How do we bother? Like, do we bother having them sign a contract when they're only going to be here for a week?"
Only for a week for barn staff. That's a very difficult one. With labor shortages right now, it's very difficult to hire a good barn staff and B, have them hang around, and it's expensive. So it's a problem every industry is facing, and the horse industry is no different than any other industry. If you're going to have barn staff at your barn, you should have a contract with them. Even just to tell them how much money you're paying them, but there should be a contract, and you need to protect them against injury.
Okay.
So even your volunteers, you can have an insurance policy that protects volunteers that come and work at your stable. So you talk to your broker.
Okay. So you mentioned a little earlier about, you know, having a hard time putting yourself on that list of, you know, priorities, but how do you find time for yourself and make that work with your busy schedule, allowing your batteries to recharge? I think before we started recording, you had mentioned that, you know, you've taken up cycling or you're an avid cyclist. So, you know, fitting it all in, how do you do that, but allow yourself the time to recharge?
Well, for me personally, I bike, I run, and I ride. So I bike maybe two or three times a week. No, I bike twice a week. I run two or three times a week. Sorry, and I ride when I can. I exercise. The exercise for me is very important for stress levels and for just my mental health. And often I exercise with friends. So I kind of combine my social with my exercise. And I get a 2-for-1 deal there. So that's one thing I do. I have to say the place that I'm most refreshed is riding. There is nothing that absorbs my attention more than a horse. You know, getting a horse ready to ride, grooming, putting the saddle on, and going out. There is it's so thoroughly immersing. More than anything else I do. If I'm running or biking, my head can still spin off into places it shouldn't be going. But horses, they're fully immersible somehow, at least in my experience.
They require
it's
you.
It's just hard, you know, in this. Yeah, to get there. And I'm in the city of Toronto. And, you know, when I grew up, I was in Mississauga and the horse barn was 15 minutes down the road. And now it's, you know, an hour in traffic both ways, and you're 2 hours, that's 4 hours, 2 hours at the barn, an hour in traffic both ways. And, it's like golf. You're there all day. And, so that's harder. And, the other issue now with horses, and maybe that's a Toronto problem, I don't know, but it's more expensive. Everything is more expensive. So they've got the drives, you've got, everything is a lot more expensive. I worry for our industry, at least around here, with the pressure on land and, you know, the horrible commutes and the prices. I worry for our industry around here. It's not as easy as looking out your backyard and getting on a horse, which it was back in our day.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of my massage clients, they do the hour commute. It's something that they're, you know, really passionate and committed to, but sort of listening to how they maneuver that into and around the rest of their life, whether it be children, jobs, you know, all this kind of stuff, it requires a lot out of them. But I totally agree with you. It's something, it's all immersive. I know when I get my hands on a horse for an hour, you know, there's no better place to be, and it requires you to be very mindful. So yeah, it's something that's very therapeutic.
Mm-hmm. And I'm still riding a bit. I'm enjoying that. Now I ride other people's horses right now, but we'll see where that goes.
That's awesome. All right. So as engrossed as you are in the equine world, yeah, what's your point of view on where equestrian sports are at right now in Canada? Where is it flourishing, and where can we be doing what, and where can we be doing it better?
I don't know if I'm the one to ask that question to, because I'm the lawyer more than on the top of those things. But as I said, in the, you know, GTA area, I think our biggest issue is commute times, locations of barns, and all the costs. Plus now, industry staff shortages, which are very difficult. We've had some setbacks. For instance, we had a wonderful standard bred program, right? And thoroughbred breeding program in Ontario. And we've had a few governments pull the rug out from under the legs of those programs. So whenever we kind of start with a successful horse program, we see government changes and it pulls out. There is a section of the Tax Act called Section 31, which puts, and this is racing, puts race horses into farming. And whereas every other business, secondary business, if I'm a lawyer and if I start a restaurant or, I don't know, race cars or any other kind of business, if I lose money in that business for a period of time, I can deduct those losses against my primary income, secondary losses against the primary income, all the losses until it's successful. In horses, because they're labeled farming, and this happens for farmers too, you can't. So I start a horse business. Maybe I buy some sport horses or I buy some race horses. I can't deduct my losses against my primary income until it becomes successful. I'm limited by Section 31 to deducting the total amount of $17,500. So you could invest $500,000 in those horses, $500,000 in the restaurant. In the restaurant, all your losses are deductible. In the horses, $17,500 is deductible if it's not your primary source of income. It's the only industry in Canada, farming, including horses, that has these hobbles, so to speak. And it prevents investment in our industry, and it puts farmers out of business. And it's archaic. It started in the 1950s. There's no rhyme or reason to this legislation. It hurts our industry. In the U.S., they're giving money to farmers and horses and saying, please, flourish. Here, you can't even deduct your losses. So it's a big impediment to this industry, and it has to be removed. Farmers are going bankrupt because of this.
So why would anybody want to start up a new equine
business? I could go on. You want me to?
Yeah.
Very difficult. It's very difficult. And just to give you an idea of what happens with farmers, and especially now, let's pick climate change. So suddenly your crops are, you know, destroyed by drought for 2 or 3 years. You've got huge expenses. You've got those big tractors and things. So what do? You start driving school bus because it gives you some income, because your farm, which was prosperous for many years, suddenly is in a loss position for 3, 4, 5 years. So you're driving the school bus to keep the family farm. CRA will come back and reassess you and say, your primary source of income for these 5 years is not farming because your losses are $200,000 a year. It's driving a school bus. That's your primary, because you're making $35,000 a year driving a school bus. Therefore, we're going to reassess your farming business, and you're no longer a full-time farmer. We're only going to let you deduct $17,500 of those losses. It puts farmers out of business in the 70s and the 80s.
So can you give the listeners maybe a couple of examples if they are horse breeders or they have an equine business of somehow, boarding business? Can you give them an example of what would be considered losses that you're referring to?
Business losses. So okay. It would be feed. It would be repairs, you know, like regular repairs. In racing, it's inventory includes horses. It would be your costs for gas, you know, just your everyday business expenses, internet, mortgage, you know, if it's a farm business.
Okay. Yeah, all of the important things you don't really think about.
No. Okay. I mean, another good thing for people to do is read books. Read books on how to build a business. Read books on how to run a business. You know, we're horse people first and business people second sometimes. But if you want to thrive rather than survive in a horse business, you've got to become a business person too. So, you know, read some books on how to run a business. And put that hat on. Sometimes it's frightening for people, but if you want to do well in horses and make a life out of it, you've got to be savvy in business and you've got to know your law.
Okay. All righty. So let's get to the book. Tell us about your new book, Canadian Equine Law, and what the experience was like for you writing and publishing it. Did it teach you anything about yourself that came as a bit of a discovery?
Sure. Well, if I can There it is.
There it is.
And it's published through Self Counsel Press. You can also pick it up on Amazon, or you can pick it up through Self Counsel Press. It is not a tome. It's written for the layperson.
Nice.
So it's not written for lawyers. It's written for horse people. Okay. A lot of it is derived from the, you know, articles I've written over the years. And in addition to the book, I have published a number of agreements, boarding agreements, breeding agreements, purchase and sale agreements. And they too are on the self-counsel, self-counsel.com website, books on law. And so you can actually go there and download a boarding agreement or a breeding agreement or a syndicate agreement for a price. But when people call me and ask me for a lease or a sale agreement, usually it's $500 and up for one from me. And it doesn't have to be, but as a lawyer, I have overhead, I have to charge, you know, it's uniquely crafted to their needs. Whereas here, they can go on the site and pull one down and fill in the blanks. And it comes with an information sheet. Have you considered this? Have you considered that? Have you thought about this? So it's a nifty way for people in Canada to paper their horse transactions without blowing the bank. So that's self-counsel press, self-counsel.com. And the book, you can buy it separately. And it's not long, but it deals with sort of most main areas that I find are important to the horse people, including the business of horses.
That's fascinating.
And this book, I started it a number of years ago, and just with my schedule, and as my kids were young, I didn't have the ability to finish it off. But last year, I really put my mind to it, got it done, and it was published this February, March.
Well, congratulations.
So you can find it on Amazon, or you can find it at Self Counsel.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm going to put that on my list.
I'm waiting for the book tour.
I'm going to put it on my list.
I'm waiting for the book tour. No one's invited me on the book tour yet.
I am sure, you know, I am definitely going to be talking to people about this subject. When the barns I go to, I'm going to be quizzing like the horse owners, the barn owners, and like, have you considered this topic? Because I think it's something that I think you're on a trajectory here. I think it's something that people really need to know about. So I think this book is going to be great for you and all of these horse owners.
One thing I would say to barn owners that's a no-brainer and an easy thing to do is the semi-annual walkabout, where you walk over your barn property and you look at it through the eyes of a boarder, a child, a horse, maybe a dog, a lawyer if you can, but you look at it through different eyes and you say, what do I need to fix? For instance, are there nails exposed in your stalls? Is your feed room sufficiently blocked off that if a horse gets loose in the barn, you can't walk into your feed area? Are your boarders allowed to mess with your feed area? Because maybe one boarder makes a mistake and gives too much of this or too much of that to a friend's horse and you've got a problem. What about trails? Are there dead tree limbs hanging over your trails? That should come off. Gopher holes. What about paddocks? In the summer, hot day like today, we leave the doors open in a barn. If a horse is able to open a box stall, what's the secondary, you know, blockage in front of the horse to stop them from going on the road? You know, do you put a pole across the barn door? Is there a gate at the entrance to the road? You know, do you have just these ideas of what could happen next? What about a pond? You've got a bunch of lady riders who bring their kids and the kids just hang around while they're riding. Is there a body of water, pool, pond, close to where they're riding, where while they're riding, the kid might go? Could there be a problem? Do you need to have some kind of a barrier? So just thinking of your property in terms, what's in your arena? Are there things that if a horse panics, someone can fall on and really hurt themselves, or something that can fall down? So just look at it through not your everyday eyes, but through the eyes of these different people. Really look at it, write down what you see, fix what you can, and then file it. You do that twice a year, morning, summer and winter. If there is ever an accident at your property, if you could show a court that every year you do a safety walk and you fix what you see and you've got them filed, they're going to think here is a responsible barn owner. And that will go a long way to convincing them that you did everything you could to avoid that accident. So
Wow.
that's a tip just for barn owners that they can do that's simple.
That is an amazing tip. Holy cow. Yeah.
Good
Okay.
tip. Good tip.
Yeah, very good tip. All right, Catherine, what do you enjoy most about being involved to the level that you are? Some people might find it taxing, all of the speaking engagements, the work with the royal, working with clients, but it appears as though you thrive on it. Is this accurate?
Yes, because I love horses. I love talking horses, and I love talking horses with people who love talking horses. So, where it's taken me, with the racing and the industry groups and it's been a really enjoyable, legal career. If you love something, it just makes work fun.
Awesome. Okay, that's great. All right, so thinking back, what has been the best lesson that horses have taught you? And how did you apply that to your life outside of your passion for horses? Did it give you a leg up on your legal career?
Yes, I think the best lesson that horses have taught me as far as law is concerned is laws of okay, so this is for all you budding young lawyers or lawyer wannabes and people in university that are thinking about law. Law is a career that's incredibly flexible. You can work for large firms and make a gazillion dollars and do what they tell you. You can work for small firms or yourself, like I'm doing, and be, the author of your own destiny. But law is flexible. I know people that loved airplanes, so they got into aviation law. I know people that love boats, and they're in nautical law. People who love music, and they're in entertainment law or television. So you can take your passion and turn it into a career in law, which is, I think, quite rare these days in terms of and what you can and cannot do. So for those budding lawyers, if you are thinking about law, it's a career that can give you as much control as you want, as much flexibility as you want, and a choice of what you do. Is it work? Yes. Is it a lot of work? Yes. And you have to be creative. I've given talks. Well, they're very interesting. I gave a talk to the Donkey Association. I mean, these are just, wonderful associations and interesting people. And there are little different kinds of associations in different places, little offshoots of this and that. And it's wonderful. People who are passionate about all areas of this industry. So it does give you an interesting perspective. Plus, you rub shoulders with the greats. Right. I've met a number of our Olympic riders and worked with them. And I'm as, awestruck as everybody else. So that's another part of it that I've really enjoyed. And working with the Royal, of course, has been wonderful for years. Good people. One of my, favorite, obviously, shows, institutions. And just you meet such great people and such wonderful animals. So and stories, right? We had we've had Mad Cow, we've had the can't remember what the one with the pig is. We've had foot and mouth swine flu, foot and mouth disease, avian flu. We've had all kinds of interesting things through the years, COVID, and each one has its challenges, and it's a unique fair. It's a unique festival. It's country in the city,
Yeah.
the Royal, and And it's just fascinating.
Well, Catherine, this has been an absolutely fascinating, eye-opening, mind-churning conversation for me. Yes, I absolutely, you've given myself and the listeners a bazillion things to think about, a lot of eye-opening experiences. I think that people are going to look at this in a different way. I am so grateful that you've been able to come on here today to take your time out of your busy schedule. Your knowledge and your expertise is greatly appreciated. Where can people find you?
Oh, good point. The name of my firm is True Law, and the website is truelawlegal.ca. So you could just Google True Law or True Law Legal. My email, can I give you my email?
Sure, we can put it in the show notes for sure, and you can share it right now.
All right, it's Catherine with a C at truelaw.legal. Catherine with a C at truelaw.legal.
Awesome. And like I said, I will be getting your book. I'm going to learn all of these things. Thank you so much again for coming on, Hitting Your Stride.
Thank you for inviting me, and I've really enjoyed myself.
So there you have it. I have some great interviews lined up for future episodes, and we'll be covering some pretty interesting topics. As always, with the intent to open and engage the horse world on a wide variety of issues. So until next time, keep your eyes forward and continue to hit your stride. To stay current with Hitting Your Stride, subscribe on my website or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. If you like what you've heard here today, make sure you share and leave a comment to help guide future episodes and widen the audience. And be sure to check out social media to keep up to date with Equestrian Elements Life Coaching.